Welcome to Fourth and Frames, a show on the Fantasy and Frames Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris Battistel. And with me, as always, are my co-hosts, Drew Scott and Rhett Manuel. Tonight, we are talking everything NFL Combine with special guest, Dustin Ludke. Let's get it popping.
This should be played at high volume, preferably in a residential area.
That was cool as shit. What the hell, man?
What's good, everybody? Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to screw up your intro, but I'm just in shock. I didn't know that was coming. That was awesome.
Yeah, for the boys, man. Appreciate everything you do, especially done this past year, grinding out with me over the past season, man. A little gift to you two cats. But with us today, we got content director at Dynasty Pros Fantasy Football, content contributor at the QB List, writer of one of my favorite in-season threads with the weekly storyline threads on Twitter. One of my favorite follows in the space, Dustin Ludke. Dustin, welcome to Fourth and Frames, man.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm glad people like those narrative tweets. I do revenge games, birthday narratives, yeah. Return to college college town narratives. People love them, man. I don't know if it really pays that much. Some teams it does, some teams it doesn't, but you know, give the people what they want, I guess.
That's it, man. Play the hits. I love it. Week in, week out, I'm always looking for maybe that edge. Maybe it's someone's birthday. Maybe someone just had a baby or there's a bonus in line or something that falls in line that's going to get these guys maybe a little bit more targeted, especially when I'm pivoting to find that hidden gem in DFS lineup. So I love that stuff, and I love the work that you put into it, and I appreciate it, man.
Well, thank you.
Yes, sir. So let's get the elephant out of the room. How was your NFL Combine, man?
Man, the Combine is always fun. It's always a blast to get to interact with these players, get to know them personally. But my favorite part is just interacting with other people in the space, whether that's fantasy people. So Dave Heilman, who is over at SPGN, the Dynasty Dork on Twitter, Tristan Cook from Dynasty Nerds, yep. Eric Froton, Cody Carpenter, like just all these guys, you know, it just Ryan McDowell, just getting there. There's a guy, JC, I know, who I've met the past couple of years, just hanging out. Wendy Early was there, who I think was just on your show before this.
Yep.
Just getting to hang out with other people. Listen, I'm married. I got a 10-year-old. My wife hates football. So, like, I can't talk football with her, right? My son's 10. He doesn't want to watch 8 hours of workout combine and talk about football. When you're just in the stands and those people just talking football, that's the best part. It's just as fun, week-long, like, let's just talk football.
I love it. And I love that the fantasy football space gets to be part of such a big event in the NFL, and seeing you and the people like you mentioned down there rubbing elbows with some of the greats amongst the NFL and some of the people in these front offices, some of these NFL execs, and you guys just being able to ask questions, watch the combine and see how it all works and be part of it, and then create content, fantasy football content based on that, just gives us as creators one more step closer to getting that ultimate, you know, just full level access pass and getting everything we need to create content and just be part of the NFL game, man. Because ultimately the four of us here, I mean, to do this full time is the ultimate goal, right? For the love of the game, it's fun and all, but when you get the chance to do that, something like that, something cool like that, go down on the combine and just do some real special.
I think we need to get away from calling ourselves fantasy football creators, because I think we are football. We are football analysts who just skew towards fantasy. Like when we're talking, hey, these are our top receivers, or this receiver did well at the combine, that's football. That's not fantasy. That's just football. I think we have pigeonholed ourselves into we just do fantasy, when really we evaluate, we scout, we look at football as football as a whole. We just have a slight leaning towards fantasy, and I think that's where I think a lot of people just go, well, you're just a fantasy guy. It's like, no, I'm an NFL guy who does fantasy.
Yeah, you put the work in, man, and the reason why you're at the NFL Combine is because you put the work in to get you to that spot. Someone said, okay, you know, we've seen the work you put in. before us, with us. We're going to send you down there to put the work in with us at the same time. So doing this, the unpaid work, all the hours that you put in studying the game, being a student of the game, for the love of the game, is what ultimately got you down to the combine, man. And it shows.
Thank you.
All right. So we're here to talk NFL Combine. Let's get to the NFL Combine. We're going to go through quarterbacks, tight ends, running backs, and wide receivers, ultimately for fantasy football purposes, because that's why we are here on Fantasy in Frames. But before we do, head over to fantasydata.com and use the promo code Fantasy in Frames and 20% off your monthly subscription to some of the most useful fantasy football data and metrics out there to help you become a better content creator and or fantasy football player. Let's hop into the quarterbacks. Now, we did see some of the top quarterbacks not participate in the drills. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, May, Dustin, of the three of those quarterbacks, which one hurt themselves the most by not participating in the drill?
I'm going to say Jaden Daniels. And I think everyone, and myself included, were fascinated with Caleb Williams not doing anything. But then that he measured, Jaden Daniels did almost nothing. Like, he didn't measure. I'll say this. I was super impressed with Caleb sticking around, going on the field for workouts, encouraging the other players, you know, having a good time, showing his personality from the reports where he stuck around to the end. He was the last player off the field. He was thanking everyone that ran the drills. Even though he didn't do the drills, he stuck around. And, like, I noticed this last year that you see these players who are just – they're passionate about other players' success. It's not just all about them. And not to say that Jaden Daniels, because Jaden Daniels in the press conference said, hey, I'm waiting until the pro day. But he didn't stick around. That, to me, like, just when you're splitting hairs on these top guys, that could be something that why didn't he stick around? That's going to raise a little bit of questions with front offices and with fans and analysts. Like, why didn't he stick around? Why wasn't he out there? Like, you're already there. Like, why would you leave? Like, what was the point? Just to come and do media? Like, there's some... And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but, like, the fact that Drake May, the fact that Caleb did stick around and were there rooting on other, the people that they've gotten to know between the Senior Bowl and their college careers and this whole week at the Combine, the fact especially for Caleb that he was out there was really impressive to me. It seemed like he was just having fun, enjoying the moment, supporting his friends. Like, and I think that's really important, especially when we're talking about guys who are going to be future leaders of an NFL franchise. It's great to see that. Not to say that Jaden Daniels isn't that, but we didn't get to see it.
Yeah. And I think ultimately Caleb Williams smashed the combine because he went down there and completely erased the narratives that maybe he's all about himself. He's not that team guy. He didn't need to go down there and do drills to increase his draft stock. He's already projected to be the number one overall pick. Maybe participating in drills kind of, you know, decreases his draft stock, but nothing he's going to be able to do in those drills is going to elevate that. What he did, like you said, stick around, cheer on the other guys, you know, be part of the event as a whole. Thank everyone that, you know, ran the events and took part in the drills and everything else. Cheer on the guys around him. That's what teams wanted to see. Those were the questions that teams had about his character ultimately as a football player. And seeing him show up, you know, full beard, no lineup, just look like he's been in the lab for the past, you know, few weeks was just a little refreshing because of the narrative that's been created about Caleb Williams and the person that he is. So seeing that whole weekend unfold for him, I think he absolutely nailed it without doing any drills. And like you said, Jaden Daniels not taking part. For me, it was I don't know about Rhett and Drew, but Drake May, I think, not taking part in the drills kind of really hurt his draft stock because there's some guys that saying he can be that top three pick, top four pick, but that might cause him to fall down if other teams don't see him being that guy. Now that the emergence of JJ McCarthy and you have Jaden Daniels there. So Rhett, Drew, chime in. I don't know if there's of the three quarterbacks, if you think one of the three took a hit by not participating in the drills.
Yeah. I think if it's one of the two, or I think if it's any of them, it's got to be those two guys if you have to pick one. I don't think any of the top quarterbacks were huge losers by any means, but I think, you know, Caleb Williams was the main guy that I did not care if he didn't do anything at the combine. You know, like, I mean, he's put enough solid tape out there the last couple of years that we don't need to see him throw the football in shorts and a t-shirt. And it, you know, he's We know he's likely to be the number one pick. So what upside is there to giving all 32 teams your medicals? Like, there's only a few teams that really need access to your medicals. So why give everybody your medicals? So, you know, it's just knowing that the presumed number one overall pick isn't going to do anything. Maybe that leaves the window open for Jaden Daniels or Drake May to you know, lift their draft stock. And they stayed put where they were as well. So I don't think it's a big deal that they didn't test either, but between those top three guys, Caleb's the one guy that I don't blame him one bit for not doing anything more than what he did do while he was there.
Yeah. And I agree with you there, but the question I come into is this: if you're a guy like Jaden, like, yes, he does media. My question is, and he said on wax, on tape, whatever, that he didn't do anything at the combine so we can give his teammates a little more shine. I think that's a little BS, because I don't think it takes that much effort to let somebody measure how tall you are. Weight, I get it, because he's probably going to come in underweight and that might hurt him a little bit. But yeah, to take your hand size, all these different things, maybe the entire thought process behind it is, and I'm not sure how it works, Dustin, maybe you can answer this for me, the measurement process. Do you have to go all in and give them height, weight, hand size, and all these things, or what?
No, I mean, I don't see those things behind those, but you can basically opt out of any part of that. Now, most people do it all, right? If you're going to get height and weight, what's the difference of stretching your arms, getting hand size? So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I get wanting to be out there to help show your teammates, which makes sense, right? He's got Malik Nabers, he's got Brian Thomas Jr., he's got John Emery, who's a running back. Also, curious thing, LSU Pro Day. It's on the 27th, same day as Ole Miss, so a rival. So same day as the Pro Day, which Ole Miss doesn't have nearly the talents. It's got some lower-end guys, but maybe there's a little bit of that going into it too. Like, I want to make sure our Pro Day is balling out. Now,
I like
Jim
that.
Nagy runs the Senior Bowl, has always said quarterbacks should run at the combine, right? Because you can cut weight for the combine, run, and then you don't have to worry about it basically for your Pro Day. So you don't have to worry about that. You can just be yourself and just focus on throwing. So I think there's part of that, but everyone's got to make their own decision. I think we've knocked a lot of them for it. I know I have. I just wish Jaden Daniels would have stuck around and shown a little more of his personality, show a little more of his camaraderie with the guys, because I think that's a huge part of the evaluation process for these teams as well.
Yeah, and as Louisiana guy, like, he's always come across as extremely likable in media. Even when, you know, you had last season when, you know, the entire state seemed to be down on him and saying, oh, he holds the ball too long, he scrambles too fast, all these different things. He was always a super positive guy in the media,
yeah,
always displayed good leadership qualities. He was also kind of living up to the shadow of Burrow last season as well, which a lot of people have kind of had to do until he went and won the Heisman this season. And I get all of that. But yeah, like you said, in a situation like that where you have a chance to at least build some goodwill, at the end of the day, Jaden Daniels doesn't know which of these guys at the combine are going to be future teammates.
Yeah.
And yeah, if he's out there at least showing his face, you know, fist bumping, dapping people up, coming up with handshakes, all the goofy stuff that 20-something year-old kids do, then, you know, he's building that camaraderie that way. And, you know, once he gets into the OTAs and all that, maybe it helps a little bit. Maybe I'm overthinking it, maybe not. But in my mind, that kind of goes into it as well, to what you're saying about just kind of hanging out and being there.
Yeah, there's a good chance that at least one of the guys that was on the field with them, which would have been running backs and wide receivers, is going to be on the team with them. There's a there's a high probability that five or six of these guys who are there, between the defensive guys and the offensive guys, are going to be teammates of his, right? And just building those connections, because we also had a lot of second generation guys in this combine, right? We had Jerry Rice's son, we had Frank Gore Jr., we had, you know, a bunch of other second generation guys. So that also helps build those connections. Plus, right, you got Marvin Harrison and Jerry Rice. You got all these other guys on the field that you can interact with, that also help build connections down the road. So, like, hey, I know Michael Irvin. Well, I know Michael Irvin pretty well, too, from the comments. So just, like, maybe that's part of it. I'm not saying Jaden Daniels is a bad, because he seems like a really nice, fun guy, and it seems like everybody loves him. So it's just – it's again, we're splitting the smallest of hairs here.
Yeah,
and that's what's going to have to be.
All right. Now, over the past two seasons, we've seen a record-breaking number of quarterbacks start a game, play in a game for the NFL. Just this past season, I believe the number hovered around the 60 mark, right, if I'm right with that. Of the top five QBs projected, not in any order here, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, and possibly one of either Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr., depending on your flavor –
Dustin, which quarterback outside of those, let's say six, because we'll lump Bo Nix and Michael Penix in as one, which one of the quarterbacks outside of that group do you see could be a potential starter this upcoming season?
So personally, I think it's Keaton Slovis. Now you're talking about a guy that was a huge recruit coming out of high school, went to USC before Caleb Williams. He's been at USC, Pitt, and BYU, so he's got three different systems already under his belt, so he's clearly got the knowledge. Doesn't have the huge arm strength, but in college, never had a season with double-digit interceptions, so protects the ball. Now he gets a little careless at times, lacks the arm strength, but I think he could go in and play a very safe game if he needed to get one or two starts, right? He could be a Derek Carr-like where he can just dink and dunk and be efficient and not necessarily make a couple big plays. He could go into it. I think he'll be a guy on a team that'll stick around to go, he's smart, he gets it. Yeah. We can rely on him if we need to. We don't want to, but right, all backups play at this point. So he's going to play probably two games. I think he could be decent. So he might be someone I'm picking up off waivers and throwing him in my taxi squad and then hope maybe I get a game or two out of him this year and he plays pretty decent.
I love that you said that because he was the exact same guy that I had written down over here. Because, yeah, he runs the fastest 40 at the combine among quarterbacks, which is like yep. – The one-legged kicking contest, you know, quarterbacks don't tend to run a whole bunch, and he ran the best of them. Great for him. 4.55 is a real solid time, but also showed good footwork and good accuracy at the combine. And you're mentioning the part where he doesn't have the big arm strength. We've seen it over the past few seasons where more and more the NFL is not as much of a downfield league as it used to be. I mean, those Jameis Winston YOLO balls are fun. But at the end of the day, so much of it is timing, getting the ball out quick and getting it out to receivers. I mean, there's so many throws behind the line of scrimmage. You know, Brock Purdy went from being Mr. Irrelevant to being one of the guys who was in an MVP conversation this year simply by putting his teammates in a position to make plays. I know Drew's over here shaking his head right now. I just rubbed him the wrong way because he's not a Purdy guy, and that's fine. But I'm just saying –
Oh, you're not wrong in anything you're saying.
The league is in that position now where a guy like Keaton Slovis can come out and, you know, just do what he does best and not have to step out of a comfort zone to be successful.
And I'll tell you this, it's not a big ball league, but if you're on a team with speed, Joe Milton, man, can chuck a ball, and it is so fun to watch. So you put him as a backup to maybe Tua on a team with a ton of speed and he needs to go in there for a game? We could see Huck a Chuck at football at its finest. That 70-yard pass he threw was a thing of beauty. We all were in the stands watching it, and it was – now he has some protection reading defense, and he's not the best accurate. But, man, if you could just chuck it up to Tyreek and you know, Waddle, woo-wee, that's going to be fun.
Money. Drew, you got one for us?
I think the low-hanging fruit is Spencer Rattler just because of the former draft pedigree and, you know, what we thought that he was going to be a couple years ago, a team possibly clinging on to that and taking a shot on him and needing a spot start and seeing, you know, every NFL team believes that they can be the one like, oh, I can fix him, you know.
I can change him.
Yeah. it didn't work out for them, but maybe it will for us, you know. And I could see a team going that way with Rattler, you know, spending a mid-round pick on him and him getting a spot start at a point. So he, outside of the names already mentioned, he'd be the guy.
Yeah. All right. Before we pivot to tight ends, quickly, we'll go around the frames. We'll start with Dustin Rhett. We'll finish with Drew. It's a hot topic on fantasy football Twitter right now in the order of the quarterbacks and what you got them. Dustin, give me your top three, man.
So I don't actually rank them currently, but in my tier one, it is Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May are my tier one quarterbacks right now.
Love it. Rhett? Same, and I have them ranked. It's Caleb May and then Daniels. Nothing has changed for me after the combine.
True. Yeah, I've got Caleb at one in a tier by himself, and then I've got Daniels at two, May at three in the same tier by themselves.
Quick question though, where's McCarthy fall into all this right now? Because he's kind of a guy where we've seen that variance where I've seen mock drafts where he goes as high as six to the Giants, and then as low as like 30 late in the first round. So like in terms of fantasy value, I have him as my four right now. Does anybody disagree with that?
No, I've got him at 4.2. I do have him in a tier by himself at 4. I think that he's still a step below the top three, but I also think he's a tier above Penix and Bo Nix too. So I've got him at 4. I got him at 4 in a tier by himself.
I have him at five. So my tier two is Penix, McCarthy, and Bo Nix. I think JD McCarthy will get drafted ahead of Michael Penix. I just worry about some of his accuracy. I saw the combine, some of his ball placement. You know, we didn't see a ton in college, so landing spot will matter. I think he'll get overdrafted, and I probably won't have any shares in because of that this year in fantasy football.
Yeah.
I'm right with you on that.
Coming back to Penix real quick, loved what he ended up doing at the combine because he tested well, and the big concern with him was, now, yes, that throwing motion is ugly, but the second biggest concern were those health checkups, which apparently came back really strong for him. So, I mean, that's a really good sign, and after he threw the ball well, I think he probably – took a little dip pre-combine and maybe coming back into that mid to late first round conversation in the draft again. So good for him. He had a nice showing.
Yeah. And I've said all along, I want Michael Penix to be drafted by the Seahawks. I think that's a great fit for him. Sit behind Geno for a year, stay in the Pacific Northwest. I think Michael Penix and the Seahawks at I think they're at 15 or somewhere in that range. I think that'd be a great spot for him.
Chris, before we move on, man, what's your top three?
I got the same top three. I got Williams, May, and Daniels. I got Daniels ahead of May for fantasy purposes.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna hate if you got May ahead of Daniels. But for me, I got Williams. QB1. He's going on to a team that was 8-9 last year. Some people tend to forget that the Bears were almost a 500 team. So they do got a good defense to put around them. They got the cap. They got the cap spending that they can build the team around Caleb Williams, the two top 10 picks. They can either go offensive line with that second pick, or they can go with a wide receiver to help that wide receiver room. Maybe even Brock Bowers. I doubt it's Brock Bowers, but maybe even Brock Bowers. So for me, when it comes down to fantasy football purposes, he's got the direct route to produce on a team that is already half decent. And if they play their cards right and manage their offseason properly, Caleb Williams can definitely have a, you know, hopefully top end QB2 season we can hope for out of a rookie pick. So, I mean, I don't hate that at all. So let's go.
What a difference a couple of years makes, man. I feel bad for Justin Fields because whenever he got drafted to Chicago, that was a fucking mess of a landing spot. And not to say that it's perfect now, but it's certainly in much
better
shape.
It's not perfect. Yeah, it's not perfect.
It's in much better shape now than it was whenever Fields got drafted to Chicago. So I feel bad for the kid. That's a completely different topic, but I do hope he gets traded to a good spot where he has a chance to start and hopefully in a better situation. I think he could really use, you know, a fresh start. So I hope he gets it.
Agreed. All right, let's pivot to one of the sexiest positions at the NFL Combine. We saw them massaging bulls nonstop on the TV, and that is the tight end position. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just search Cade Stover on
Stover
Instagram.
Farms.
And you will find them just massaging the leather. So before the combine, it was Brock Bowers and maybe Jatavion Sanders, depending on how you had them, then a bunch of other guys for most people. So using the combine for me as a tool, as a guy who's ranking or trying to pivot point, find the exact differences between these tight ends, the combine for the tight end position for me is an important tool because I can try to differentiate the athletes from the guys that are maybe just going to go into the NFL and be elite blockers, right? So with the metrics that we saw from the combine, we didn't see Brock Bowers test. He most likely didn't really need to. There's nothing really going to help his stock most likely. Nope. He's the tight end one. He's top 10 pick for most. Dustin, which of the tight ends helped and which of the tight ends hurt their draft stock at the NFL Combine?
So the guy that I think hurt himself the most is Ben Sinnott. He was in my tier one. He was in my tier two. I love talking to him, huge personality, but seems to really enjoy the physicality of the position, the more blocking side. So tight ends, right, they go one of two paths. Either it's pass catching or blocking. He seemed like he might go a little more towards the blocking. He seemed to really like it. He's a former hockey player. Just seemed to enjoy that physicality. So my question to a lot of them was, coach lets you call one play, what's it going to be? And he was like, power, I just want to go in and hit someone. So if he enjoys blocking, he's obviously excels at blocking.
George Kittle. Can't be mad at that.
He can't be mad at that, but I just think the way he framed things and the way that he lit up when he talked about blocking really kind of sat me. 4.68, decent speed, you know, just middle of the road and everything. I don't think he helped his staff a lot. I think I have fears that he may become a blocking tight end more in the NFL than he is a pass catching tight end. And guys that helped themselves, Theo Johnson from Penn State, I think jumped up a ton. Yeah. I loved him. I love Jaheim Bell. Jaheim Bell was in my tier two, stayed there. So my tier one is obviously Brock Bowers. Tier two post combine is Bell, Cade Stover, and Jatavion Sanders. Ben Sinnott fell down to tier three. But I think Theo Johnson actually jumped up to tier three from tier four. I loved what I saw from him, loved the way he talked. He was just a fun guy to be around, seemed like he really understood football. A little bit on maybe the smaller side. I mean, well, he's not, say, 6'6", but he's 259, so like maybe he's almost too big. Like, can he really move? Yeah. I just don't know. Like, he ran a 4.57, which is really good for his size. Jaheim Bell's on the smaller side, so I wonder if he can be, you know, maybe just a slot guy. But I think both those guys helped their stock with the way they performed.
Yeah, so it's amazing how we can hear the same thing but interpret it different ways, because I saw the quote that you posted, and the way that I took that was, okay, if he's going to be that willing of a blocker, but he's also as athletic as he is, you know, at the combine, he had the best vertical and broad jump among tight ends, and he was eighth in the 40-yard dash. So he showed the athleticism, and then he gloated about how much he loves blocking. To me, that's like a fantasy goldmine, because coaches aren't going to want to take him off the field. So he's got the athleticism to be a pass catcher, and he's also got the willingness to be a blocker. So that, in my eyes, that made him come out as a winner to me. But like I said, that's the beauty of how we absorb this stuff and how we can take things different ways. So I was so confused at the beginning whenever you called him a loser. But then once your explanation, even though I disagree, I understood, you know, understand where you're coming from. But yeah, that's the way that I took it. So for me, I had Jatavion Sanders 2 and Ben Sinnott at 3 pre-combine, and it's taken everything in my power not to like overreact and move him up to 2 over Jatavion Sanders after the combine.
Yeah, I think Ben Sinnott, like, he can play well. I just worry, like, if he goes to a team that doesn't feature the tight end as much as, let's say he goes to Cincinnati, where we've seen these good but not great tight ends go, and they just never seem to focalize. Like, he just becomes a decoy, almost like I chip, and then I go up, but I never actually get the pass. That's my fear for him, is that he just doesn't get – he's not going to go to, like, a Sam LaPorta role where it's just, like, all offense all the time. Like, he's going to be blocking a lot, and that also leads to a lot of chip blocks, which I think can then slow down his routes. And when we're talking about a fast-paced offense, he can maybe be schemed out a little more. So – landing spot's going to matter for these guys. It's a deep, deep tight end class.
Yeah, landing spot and draft capital are huge. And it's, for me, whenever I'm looking at tight ends for fantasy purposes, I want them to, at worst, be able to be the number two pass catching option on their team if I really think that I can, if I want to elevate those guys and project, you know, real upside for them. And the situation you painted with Cincinnati, you know, at least we don't know what T. Higgins' long-term future is, but going into next season, you know, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, that's 1 and 2 on the pecking order. So we know the upside in Cincinnati is to be the third option, which for, you know, catching passes from Joe Burrow, that's the other side of it. You could do worse, but you know that you're capped at being the number three option in the offense. So you're not wrong. Landing spot, draft capital, those are going to be huge for these guys.
And what's nice, like, we want them to be number two, but if they're number three or four, as long as they are number two, one or two in red zone targets, so Ben Sinnott being able with the vert.
Yeah, it's true,
too. And Theo Johnson with the 6'6 size, like, that size and that vertical jump in the red zone makes a huge, right? Because you can catch 30 passes, but if 5 of them are touchdowns, I'll take that over a guy who catches 60 passes and scores ones, Kyle Pitts, right? Like, I'll take a guy who catches 5 touchdowns over a guy who catches 1, but has lower, like, that's just going to help you win weeks.
Yeah. Can we pivot, though, real quickly into the Jatavion Sanders conversation? Because I feel like it needs to be had for a guy who is very much seen as a guy who was going to thrive as sort of being a slot guy, didn't run great. So, Justin, I wanted to ask you the takeaway on Sanders for you coming out of the combine.
I mean, it was just – obviously none of them really ran super fast other than Devin Culp. I think it was just like – yeah, I mean, the dude flew. And then if you count Johnny Wilson, who's a wide receiver, who's the size of a tight end, he flew too.
Jatavion
Sanders, to me, was one of those guys who just did good and never really separated on either way. And I think that's what we get the combo. We get the guys who do exceptionally well. And we get the guys who do absolutely crap. Audric Estime, running back. But, you know, that's something other. But he just did good. And I wanted him to do better, but he didn't do broad. He didn't do the vert. I mean, a 4.6940 is not horrible. Like, you don't need to run super fast. He's still 6'4", so he's not lumbering like a Theo Johnson at 6'6". Like, yes, it's 2 inches. He's 245, so maybe a little too big. Might have to slim down. But I think just his overall production in college and what we saw, I don't think there was a reason to move him down out of my tier two. Now, you can say Cade Stover might be over him. You might say he's not. You might say whoever. But I think he's still up there. Again, draft capital landing spot's going to matter for him.
Yeah, like we're talking winners and losers, but if you ask me who was the meh tight end of the week, that's David Sanders for me. It's just like, whatever, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw it on film with him. You know, I never saw him line up as much of an inline guy. He never seemed like much of a willing blocker. So for me to be all in on him, he needed to run maybe that low 4.6, high 4.5 sort of thing to be, you know, one of these slot sort of Gesicki sort of tight end types, which Mike Gesicki, you can take it or leave it at this point. But coming out of his draft year, you know, there was a lot of hype behind that sort of guy and kind of expecting him to be an asset, which didn't really pan out. But with a guy like that, you want to at least see him flash that athleticism. So that way you at least have that little twinkle in your eye. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, he's never going to break off like, you know, a George Kittle 70-yard run because he's just not that fast. But if he gets, you know, he's going to get a catch in lumber for a couple yards. And I'll tell you a guy that I was, you know, the combine's great because you get their personality. And I don't want to say he doesn't have personality, but Cade Stover scared the crap out of me. That dude was all serious the whole time. I mean, you looked at me like, I don't want to run into you over Dark Alley. Like, he was just all business all the time. And then someone asked him about losing to Michigan 3 years in a row. And boy, was he not happy in that. Like, that dude, I'm worried when he gets in the NFL, like, he catches the ball, he's going to truck people. Like, he is just going to run him over.
How much does draft capital and team landing spot factor in to Brock Bowers for you?
It factors with everyone. I mean, I think Brock Bowers is good, but we didn't get any combine numbers, so we'll see what the pro day looks like. To me, it's always going to be landing spot. So last year, I left the combine with Michael Mayer, Dalton Kincaid, Luke Musgrave, and Sam LaPorta as my top four tight ends, but I knew whoever went to Detroit was going to be the number one guy, and obviously Sam LaPorta went there and was the number one guy. So that's always going to matter to me. Ray, we could see a Kyle Pitts-type level career, you know, as it's been short career for Kyle Pitts, for Brock Bowers, where he goes to a team that doesn't necessarily focus on the tight end and kind of gets lost in the shuffle.
Yep. I love it. All right. Let's call it right now. March 2024, at the end of next fantasy football season, week 17, who's the number one scoring rookie fantasy tight end? We'll start with Dustin.
I'm going to say, and this is a wild card, but I'm going to say Jack Westover.
Oh, okay. Not a wash. I like it. Is there a big reason to that? Or do you?
I love what he said in press conferences when I asked him about the play. I kind of like, you know, he's got a hand injury, so I think he's going to be ready for the start of the season. I just see him being a intelligent guy who can go out there and can create a la Mike Gesicki. Like, he just seems to have the intelligence that I'm looking for, that he can run some dynamic plays. So I think he's going to be the guy.
All right, Drew.
I'll take the low hanging fruit. It's gonna be Brock Bowers. Like, he's gonna get the draft capital. I think he gets the opportunity as well. I don't think there's any way a team doesn't take a tight end as early as you're gonna have to take Brock Bowers and not immediately feature him. And then he has the skill set and ability to capitalize on those opportunities. And I know we're only talking combine, but can I give you an overall tight end one, overall fantasy tight end one prediction for next year?
Let's hear it.
If Kirk Cousins indeed ends up in Atlanta, Kyle Pitts is going to be tied in one next year. Book it, man.
No. I said this on a show a while ago. Here's the deal. Kyle Pitts is not a unicorn. He might just be a donkey with an ice cream cone taped to his head. Donkeys are still valuable, but he's not a unicorn. He's just not.
We are very quickly forgetting just how good he was as a rookie, and that he's still, I think he's still just as young as some of these rookies coming in this year. So I think we're forgetting how special he was as a rookie before he had to catch passes from Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder. Just saying, and dealing with the injuries last year too, assuming he comes into next year healthy. And again, that was with the caveat that Kirk Cousins is his quarterback. Yeah. We saw what he could do with TJ Hockenson, and at worst, he would be the number two option with Drake London, you know, there, which is, yeah, you know, I already mentioned that's what I want from a tight end. So I'm still all the way. I'm a sicko, whatever it comes to Kyle Pitts. I'm sick in the head. I'm still all the way in on that. So sorry, off topic, but whenever I saw the question in the show sheet, I wasn't sure if you were talking rookies or vets. So I had both answers ready, but I figured I took the boring, easy answer for the rookie route. So I wanted to give you a little bit more spicy for the, you know, for the overall tight end one.
A donkey with an ice cream cone
attached to his head. Taped to his head.
It's an all-timer. Rhett, you got one for us?
Yeah, the low-hanging fruit is Bowers, but an interesting wild card for me is going to be Theo based off of the draft capital because of the athleticism. So,
yep. I like it. It's Ben Sinner. It's always going to be Ben Sinner.
We don't even got to ask you, Chris.
If it's not Brock Bowers, it's Ben Sinner. BSOE. Especially if he lands in a more lucrative spot for us fantasy managers that already own shares of Ben Sinner. I mean, I'm going to be taking those things to the bank. So we've talked quarterbacks. We've talked tight ends. We got Dustin Ledke here with us at the Done It 13 on X. We're talking everything NFL Combine from this past weekend. And we're going to dive into probably one of the more interesting positions in this year's rookie class, a class that is loaded with wide receivers, top heavy with quarterbacks. But the value of the draft seems to lie in this position, and it is the running backs. Now, out of all the running backs that tested this past weekend, Dustin, is there one running back that really just captured your heart and this is your, you know, Vontaze Mack or nobody player for you entering rookie drafts this season?
I mean, I want to say my guy, Dylan Lobby, because I interviewed him a couple weeks ago. Love that dude. Talked to him a bunch. But I'm going to go with Isaac Guerriendo from, I don't know where he was, originally from Michigan. Super fast combine time. He was 4.41 in the 40. He had a 1:61 10-second split, he had a decent 40. He had a real good 40. I'm looking at the wrong person. I liked what I saw from him. Ran super fast. I think he's going to be a guy late in drafts. So he had a 4.33 40, and he had a, where is he at in 10-second splits? He had a 1.55 10-second split. So really good numbers. I like what I saw from him. Really increased his stock. He's going to be probably a third or fourth rounder, probably fourth rounder. But I think the speed, I think his skill set is there that I think he can produce. I think he can be a complimentary back. I think he's a little bit like Khalil Herbert coming out. Will probably be behind a vet. And then we'll have a chance to kind of get some work in and then be something next year. So for Dynasty specifically, I'm drafting him. But he's my guy. And obviously Dylan Lobby, because that's my dude outside of football. The guy's super cool. So both those guys who are great pass catchers with speed.
Yeah, I love it. Rhett, is there a guy for you that came out of the combine that maybe took a bit of a hit?
I didn't have anybody who I was really going to talk about taking a hit. I was looking at Jalen Wright as somebody who actually raised the stock a little bit. Ran that sub 4.440, had some production profile, big conference from Tennessee, you know, 210 pounds. Does everything well for me personally. He went from somebody who I wasn't looking at that hard to now he's one of my top five backs in this rookie class. You know, you have your usual suspects, but he probably replaces Bucky at this point in my top five. So,
yeah, Bucky did not test well down at the combine this past weekend. And for a player that's his size, you want him to be that high, you know, high testing athlete, that guy that's gonna just smash every metric, and he just wasn't that this past weekend. So Bucky Irving from the combine has taken a bit of hit for me, and my rankings dropped him down a bit. Drew, is there a guy that has ultimately cemented himself as a top tiered running back for you in your rookie rankings? And you can find your rookie rankings. Where can you find those, Drew?
You can find them over at www.fantasyandframes.com. And a guy that did cement himself at the top. I already had him in my tier one, but he just cemented himself. He's stuck there. He's not going anywhere. And it's Trey Benson. You know, I know I'm not saying anything that nobody doesn't already know, but just having him toward the top of my running back rankings and then seeing the performance he put on at the combine. The big thing for me is it gave me more confidence that he's going to get day two draft capital. And really, like, that's the – I don't really care where you go, like, as far as team goes, outside of a few exceptions. You know, that's not uniform across the board. You know, if somebody, Like if somebody gets their draft capital for some reason, but they go to San Francisco, then you know I'm going to be a little bit less excited. Or if they go to Atlanta, now that Arthur Smith isn't there to sabotage Bijan anymore, you know, like it, landing spot does somewhat matter. But for the most part, I mean, if you look at the top 13 running backs in Dynasty ADP right now, 12 of the 13 were drafted in either round one, round two, or round three. So yeah, I think Kyren Williams is the only one in the top 13 ADP that wasn't a day one or day two draft pick. And I, you know, I think that you can make an argument that he shouldn't be in the top 13 fantasy running backs for Dynasty, but that's, hey, that's either here nor there. So, but I think Trey Benson did a great job of, you know, he's going to make it really difficult for teams not to take him on day two. So he was the guy that kind of cemented himself for me. And then I'm just going to mention this as a loser because it hurts and I need to talk about it a little bit. I loved Audra Gestimi's tape. Yeah. Loved it. And then he went and ran that 40 that he ran. And I, you know, whenever I first saw the 40 results, I was like, I mean, whatever. Like whenever I watched this tape, I didn't expect him to come out and run a blazing 40. But then I saw on Twitter, Mike Cash, friend of the show at FF Mike Cash, if you're not following, you should be. Only two of 30 running backs drafted in the top 100 picks have had a 40 times slower than 4.6, which Audra Gestimi was slower than 4.6. And both of those two running backs that were drafted in the top 100 picks, despite not running a better than 4.640, were both drafted by the Buffalo Bills. So, you know, you had one team that just decided, hey, we're just going to invest in slow running backs on day
two. Dust.
Pay no attention.
sorry, man. You know, for the most part, if you want your favorite running back to get drafted within the top 100 picks, they need to at least run a 4.6. And so even with the 40, I went back and watched some more tape. Like, am I crazy? I still like the tape, but the reality is if he doesn't get day two draft capital, even I think he can still play himself into a role, but it's just going to be a much more uphill battle than it would have been if, you know, he would have had a better showing at the combine and could have gotten day two draft capital. So I'm much more nervous about him now than I was pre-combine.
Yeah, and he was 0.09 over his weight-adjusted 40, which is, for me, the more bigger telling. So when you're looking at 40s, I look at weight-adjusted 40s. So yeah. He ran a 4.71. Based on his height and weight, he should have ran a 4.62. So he's 0.09, which doesn't sound like a lot over. But when you're talking about, like, Trey Benson, who ran the second best at 0.22 under his weight adjusted 40. Now the best was Isaac Uriendo, who ran a 0.29 under his weight adjusted 40. That's where I see the speed based on that. So you're looking at guys who ran,
point.
If he's running over his weight adjusted 40 by 0.09, that says a lot. Like, he doesn't have that burst. He doesn't have that kind of thing. And he only had a 1.54 10-yard split, which is actually really good. I just wonder if it's going to be enough. I think he's just hit the line and fall over. Like, he's just going to fall into 4 yards every time. I don't see him breaking off huge runs.
Yeah, I think was it the vertical and the broad jump that he did well in? I can't remember off the top of my head. I know he tested well in a couple categories, but I know for certain it wasn't the 40.
Yeah, so. He was fourth in the vert with a 38, and he was, let's see, he is fourth in the broad jump as well with a 10.5.
Okay. Yeah, so he still showed a little bit of explosiveness in different areas, but I'm just, like I already said, I'm more than anything, I'm just worried the draft capital won't be there. Whereas, you know, coming into the combine, I thought if he put on a little bit more of a show that if you combine that with the tape he's put out, I thought he might have been able to be inside those top 100 picks. So yeah. that was sad for me personally.
But if you look at the broad and the vert with his 10-second split, to me, that screams goal line back. That screams.
Yeah.
Jump over the line, punch it in. Like, that's what he's going to do. He's going to get that quick burst, and he's, what, 5'10"? He's 5'11", 221. Like, he is just a little ball, like, little wrecking ball. So, goal line situation, yeah. He may steal a bunch of touchdowns from someone. He may be the fantasy player we hate the most because he just might have the seven carries for seven touchdowns and 5 yards, especially, right? Like, that's just
in Atlanta.
Yeah. And so I'm not, Chris, don't you dare. So I'm not comparing the players, but I could see him ending up carving out like a Gus Edwards type role that he's played for Baltimore or something like that. I could see him ending up with something like that. But man, it's just, you don't want touchdown dependent running backs.
No, you want high volume yardage guys. And yeah, you're probably going to get, he's probably a goal line vulture for somebody. He's going to ruin a backfield is what's going to happen. He's going to come in and ruin a backfield.
Yeah. And there's another running back that's hot topic between the film community and the analytics community, and that is Michigan running back Blake Corum. Where does Blake Corum fit for you in this rookie draft class, Dustin?
I have him in my tier one. And I think I have him third if I had to rank him. Trey Benson, then Braylon Allen, then Blake Corum. Now, I am a Michigan fan, so I will preface it by that. There might be a little bias, but I like what he did. Like, he can pass catch. He's got good speed. He's not, like, super fast, but he's enough that I think it's fine. Like, I don't need him to be a game breaker, but I think he's good enough. Now, he didn't run the best. He ran a 4.53, which, again, isn't, like, blazing speed, but, you know, it's middle of the road. They get a 10-yard split. That wasn't great either. But I think his pass catching is really right, especially for fantasy, because that's going to be something. Right. And here's the deal. Whichever running back lands for the Chargers is going to be the guy I'm going to get. And if it's Blake Corum, even more so, because Harbaugh's there, knows how to use him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at whatever running back goes to the Chargers is going to be a fantasy powerhouse, because they're just going to pound the rock and they're going to get a ton of volume. And I'm hoping it's Blake Corum. I think he might be, if that's where he goes, he'll be my RB1 in this group easily.
Yep. He's a tough dude, man. Seeing him throw up as many reps as an offensive lineman, the guy's just a solid bowling ball. And like you said, if he ends up in a great situation with the Chargers, I mean, it could be fantasy gold. So with the class how it is, with there not really being that, you know, generational talent within the class as a whole, is draft spot and draft capital more important this year than any other year at the running back position?
I don't care about draft capital. I care about draft spot, right? Chargers are a good spot. Cincinnati, who are releasing Joe Mixon, that's a good spot. You know, there's other teams out there, right? Obviously, we know Atlanta's not a great spot. Carolina might be a good spot if they can fix their offensive line. You know, there's just going to be a few of those spots, right? We all love Zach Charbonnet post-combine last year. Then he goes to Seattle, and we're like, well, we're out because they got Kenneth Walker, right? It's just one of those things where he just goes to a bad spot. That's just not great for him. So draft spot, landing spot matters. Capital, I could care less about at this point because it's all about how you get used, right? I'm a Bills fan. I've always said Dalton Kincaid wasn't going to be good last year because you could say draft Kenneth Walker, but the landing spot didn't fit for him. You know, they don't use a tight end. They don't use a slot receiver, and they still have Dawson Knox. And that played out true when Dawson Knox was playing. So landing spot's definitely going to matter. And I'll say this. I get they're all like roughly the same height. Braylon Allen looked like a tight end hanging out with the running backs when they were all together. Like, they're all in the hallway. I'm walking with Dylan Lobby talking. I'm like, who is this giant like in front of us? It's
big dude,
Braylon Allen. Like, he is massive compared to the rest of them. It's just a mismatch. It's just he's such a beast. I think he's going to get plus he's only 20. So there's a couple guys in the top end, but I think there's going to be a lot of guys. I think we're going to see a run in the fourth and fifth round of running backs teams stocking up on these guys who could have value. So landing spot really matters for me.
There it is. Let's play a little game. We're going to play RB3, and these are for those fantasy managers that stockpile those fourth and fifth round rookie picks looking for that diamond in a room full of coal. So RB3, give me one name of a potential undrafted free agent that can make some noise in a backfield this year.
And now I don't know so I think like Dylan Lobby gets drafted. I'm going to go Frank Gore Jr. He might get drafted in the fifth or sixth round. I like the professional pedigree. We've seen these guys who have dads in the NFL, especially dads who played the game right away, and Frank Gore played it, you know, a long time, a lot of different systems, has probably taught his son how to be an NFL running back from the day he was born. Like, he saw his dad do it. He understands what it means. Like, he understands the work that goes into it. He understands the sacrifice that's needed for it. So I think he's going to be someone that probably isn't drafted in your rookie drafts. I think he's going to be hanging out there as free agent. So week one, when I have a guy go on IR, I'm probably scooping up Frank Gore Jr.
Like it. Rhett, you got one for us?
Yeah, I'm going to go Kamani Badal out of Troy. I know he's small. He's 5'8", but he's 213 pounds. So you know that body, that BMI is going to be up there. Great explosive stats coming out of combine. Ran a 4.46. That was 81st percentile. Shuttle was 4.15, that's 78% percentile. 10 yards through was 1.53 in the 83rd percentile. Vertical was 37.5, 84% percentile. And the broad jump was 120, which is 61st. And the three cone was in the 60th percentile. So look, I get it. He's a small school guy. You don't know how those guys project. But explosiveness matters, and explosiveness lends itself to big plays. So yes, I get these sort of guys are risky. You know, we had the same talk with Sean Tucker last year. No offense, Drew. It feels like I'm coming to you for tonight. I'm not, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, a guy like that, I mean, if he's there, he probably won't get drafted in your rookie drafts. He might be a worthy taxi squad stash and see what happens.
Yeah.
All right.
Drew?
Yeah, so for me, it has been and continues to be Isaiah Davis, man. I enjoyed his tape. His RAS score ended up coming out pretty good. He was under that magic 4.6 number, right around that magic 4.6 number for the 40. And I think that he could be an undrafted guy that ends up with a, you know, with an opportunity to get some work. And I think he's got the skill set and the size to make some noise out of it.
I love it. That's the running back position from the NFL Combine. We got about 10 minutes to go before we lead into the Shoot the Gap episode with Gary Davenport from, they're covering everything IDP over there with Jorge Edwards, Gary, and I believe Nate, and is the Dynasty Deviant back on there with them?
I don't know who's supposed to be on there tonight. I'm not sure who's supposed to be on there tonight.
I know Davenport's on there. And he's the godfather of IDP, so make sure that after we end,
I think it might be Justin Taylor on tonight, actually.
Oh, okay, right on. Yeah, Justin Taylor, good cat. JT Orange, make sure you follow him on X. Now we're gonna get into one of the hottest positions on Twitter today, and that is the wide. JT is joining us. There you go. And that is the wide receiver position, and how much of these top end guys analytically maybe aren't the studs that they show on film. I think it was Scott or Shane Barrett dropped a great tweet breaking down yards per route run and the top end wide receivers and how guys below the 2 yards per route run threshold don't correlate well to the NFL. Yeah. And I think he has that broken down since 2015. There's only really been the 2 guys, and those 2 guys were supreme athletes, and that was Terry McLaurin and DK Metcalf. So with the group, I believe that was on that list in Adonai Mitchell, Xavier Leggett, and Brian Thomas Jr. Which of those 3, there were some other guys on the list as well, but those 3 are I guess being projected to be top 24 picks in 12-team rookie drafts this season. I mean, Leggett, you can say he can fall to the 3rd, but the other guys, I mean, Brian Thomas is going top 5 picks, top 6 picks, top 7 picks in some rookie drafts. So of the 3 guys, Dustin, who's the bust?
Probably Leggett is my guess as the buck. I think Brian Thomas is going to be fine. A.D. Mitchell is good. Even if you put Keon Coleman up there, like I think he's going to be a first-round pick in the NFL draft. Leggett just didn't do much for me. He didn't stand out. There was nothing I was like, oh, he looks good at this. It was just kind of like, he's there.
Yeah. Drew?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same answer for me. Whenever you take as many years as it did to, you know, to cross, like he didn't cross 300 yards in college before his last year. Whenever it takes that long, man, I'm out. And I know that there were other factors, and I do feel bad for the guy. Like, he hasn't had the easiest road to the NFL by any means. He's had to overcome a ton of adversity from his high school coaches wanting him to play quarterback just because they wanted his athletic ability to just, you know, basically turn him into a running quarterback, to, you know, losing both of his parents whenever he was going through school and injuries. And I think he was in a car or a motorcycle accident, like dude. And then, you know, all the prospects have had to deal with COVID. Like, the dude has had just shit break after shit break the whole way. So I'm rooting for him to succeed. But if I had to make a bet on who wouldn't, he would have to be my bet out of it. But I truly hope I'm wrong, because the dude has had a shit run of luck. And so I hope that he gets to the NFL and thrives.
Yeah. And Rhett, how unfair is it going to be if the Kansas City Chiefs end up with Xavier Worthy, man?
I mean, it's been well documented exactly what he did at the combine, how fast he ran. I mean, coupling him with Mahomes' arm, coupling him with Rashee Rice, Travis Kelce, it feels like a little bit too good of a fit for everything for something to go wrong there if he ends up there. So, it would probably be pretty unfair. I agree with you on that.
I don't think he makes it to the Chiefs in the draft. And, he's fast, but, man, is he – His legs are so skinny that everyone else's arms are bigger than his legs. I worry that he just might just get snapped in half in the NFL. But man, is he fast and he is fun and he enjoyed every moment of it. That was great. I don't think he makes it to the Chiefs draft picks. I think they're more likely to get a Keon Coleman, which I think is probably a better fit. But yeah, if he goes to Chiefs that speed, I'm worried he goes to the Dolphins more than anything else because
Jesus Christ.
I mean, they are just speed. You got him on the team. Ooh, man.
Yeah, can we just clear up one thing real quick though? I saw a ton of once he ran the 40 he did, I saw a ton of tweets of putting him with all the other people that ran really fast 40s at the receiver position. And the people like, oh my God, look at the other people on the list. Xavier Worthy's a bust now. Like, but just go compare Xavier Worthy's freshman season to the rest of the guys on that list, entire college career. He outproduced most of those other cats in 1 year. Like, don't even account for what he did in his sophomore and junior year. Like, he is not the same dude that those other guys running blazing 40s were. He is not just fast. He is fast. And I feel like before the combine, we already knew he was fast, but then he went and made fast people look not fast. But, you know, on top of that, he was also extremely productive in college. So let's not do the whole, oh, he's on a list with a bunch of busts that ran a fast 40, so he's going to be a bust. Like, this is not apples to apples here.
Yeah, and I wish we would have seen him do some of the other pass catching drills. So I would love to have seen that, but we didn't get to see it. He already opted. He already said he wasn't going to do them. So we'll see what he can be. I mean, speed will get you on the field and get you on a team pretty quick.
Yep.
I do think it's fair, like you pointed out, though, Dustin, to have some concerns about his size. I think that's fair.
I mean, it's the same size as Tank Dell, but just built differently.
Right. Yeah.
So.
Interesting. Now, you did mention Keon Coleman, and just like the tight ends, the combine for the wide receivers, milliseconds can cost some of these guys millions of dollars. You only get to see so much on television. Dustin, you were down there watching every rep, everything that was going on the field, off the field. Who's a wide receiver in the class that you could see possibly falling completely down draft boards and going into that day three draft window?
I mean, it sounds crazy to say because I thought he could have jumped up into tier one. Is Troy Franklin. He did not have a good combine. He just kind of fell apart there. I mean, especially when you have other guys doing so well, when you have an Xavier Worthy doing well, when you have, you know, Ladd McConkey and Roman Wilson coming out and putting on shows, you had guys, one of my guys that were like Bud Means, who had a really good combine. Like, Troy Franklin just didn't have a great combine. He was like 40th, he had a 4.41 40, which is great, but a 161 10-yard split, which is the slowest in the group. 39-inch vertical. So like decent numbers, but I thought he could jump up into that tier one with the three guys, and he just didn't. And I think he's almost in tier three for me now.
Real quick, correct me if I'm wrong, Dustin. Worthy didn't do the gauntlet, right?
He didn't do anything.
Okay.
He ran out of the building. What was great is he was the last guy because they do mouth for the quarter. He was the last guy. He ran the first one, then they went through it again. He was the last guy and it took off and everyone just celebrated with him. Caleb Williams was out there, which I thought was great to see. Like, and everyone was just celebrating him. And then he just stuck around, put on his sweats and just waited for the official time to come in. Yeah, he had already said, like, I think before that, he's like, I'm not doing the testing, I'm just gonna run. So
love it. Just a track.
Okay, so Chris, you mentioned Keon Coleman. I need some help on him because he's probably the receiver I'm most conflicted on. Whenever you look at contested catches in college, like if you look at I wish I could find it again right now, but I don't want to take the time to look it up while I'm talking. But if you look at a list of receivers that have been drafted over the last few years that, you know, have a high percentage of their targets being contested catches in college, it's essentially just Nico Collins and then a whole bunch of busts at the receiver position. But then on the flip side of that, for whatever reason, I don't know why this information wasn't made available to us last year, but apparently, you know, they have ways to track how fast guys run the gauntlet, right? And last year, the fastest guy at the gauntlet was Puka Nacua. Now we didn't find that out until this year at the combine, which is horseshit. We should have gotten that information last year. But you know, so Keon Coleman didn't separate well in college. He a ton of contested catches, but then he goes out and has the best gauntlet time and looks really smooth doing it. So it's like
and had the worst 40 time.
Right, right. So I don't know what the hell to do with this dude. And I think he's going to get the draft capital. And if he does get a first round draft capital, it's probably going to be the back of the first, which means he's going to go to a good team, likely with a good quarterback. And so I don't know what the hell to do with this dude. Right now he's I've got him at wide receiver 9 in a big tier of guys that I essentially don't know what to do with post-combine. You know, I've got some analytical guys that didn't necessarily test well. There's some film guys that tested good. Like A.D. Mitchell, his analytical profile sucks, but he looked good at the combine, and he's got some good tape. Troy Franklin, he's an analytical darling, but he didn't look great at the there's a bunch of receivers now that I'm somewhat conflicted on, but he's like top of the list. I don't know what the hell to do with the guy.
He plays faster. So the problem with the 40 is they start in this, like, you know, track start. So it's just like, so here's the thing with the gauntlet. A lot of the receivers don't run it at full speed because you have to move. If you run at full speed, and we saw this with Zay Jones last year, you're too fast, and the QBs can't, like, they're expecting you to go half speed, and they don't see you run at full speed. So it's not a true gauge of their speed. Yes, he had the top time at like 20 miles an hour or something like that. He plays faster than his 40 time makes him leave. I get the contested catches, but I think it's one of those things where I think he's just going to be good. He's going to get first-round draft capital. I'm really hoping my Bills take him. They've been projected to take Brian.
That would be a good fit.
They've been projected to take Brian Thomas. I hope they take, you know, Keon Mitchell. I was sitting with a guy who had a little vested interest because he knows Keon Mitchell's Keon Coleman's agent, so we were keeping a little extra eye on him and just watching him, and I think he's going to be good. I just don't think he's one of those guys that just doesn't test well, but when you watch the film, it's there.
As well, yep. I love it. That is the NFL Combine Reaction episode with special guest Dustin Luedtke, boots on the ground down in Indy this year. Dustin, we really do appreciate your time and your insight coming on the show and talking ball with us. One thing we do for our guests every time they come on is we give them the frame and we give them the opportunity to let the people know what they got going on inside of fantasy football, outside of fantasy football, and where they can find you across all platforms. Brother, so by all means, man, go ahead.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, X at the DUnit13. That's the best place to find me. Find my work over at Dynasty Pros. But I want to shout out one of my good friends. He has a clothing line called FTR Apparel. This is one of their shirts. It's a nonprofit. Basically, he's a doctor who got a concussion in med school, thought he was going to have to do anything, made a company called FTR, so finished the race. So he sent me a bunch of shirts. I gave some out at the combine, but want to shout out to FTRapparel.com. They basically, all the proceeds go to charity. So if you guys are looking for some workout clothes, a hoodie, a sweatshirt, this is their Unbreakable one. It's a super soft shirt. But check them out. Again, all the proceeds go to charity. And they actually have like 5 or 6 charities, and you can pick which charity you want your proceeds to go to.
Like that.
That's great, man.
Like that.
So shout out FTR Apparel.
FTR Apparel. I love that. Rhett, Drew, any last words?
No, man, I'm ready for free agency now. The NFL is just the gift that keeps on giving. So we got to do the whole rookie thing now. We got to do the franchise tag thing. So now I'm just ready to see what free agency holds for us.
Yeah, my parting shot tonight is I'm just a little bit disappointed in how down Dustin is on my boy Jonathan Brooks. But you know what? That's another story for another day. We'll have that discussion off camera.
He's still in my tier one, man. He's still tier one.
He's RB1 still.
Yeah, dog.
All right. Once again, Dustin, we appreciate you. We appreciate everyone that tuned in, that dropped the line for us on the chat. For Rhett, what do you got? Do I take BTJ at the 108? What do you think with that? Do you take Brian Thomas Jr.? Rhett, I know Rhett's answer. Rhett's taking him at the 104, 105. Where are you taking BTJ? You got the 108. Team disruption is going to have a lot to do with it, but you taking him at the 108?
Yeah, I take him at the 108.
If you have to draft today, I think I think it's between him and Xavier Worthy, and I've got Brian Thomas Jr. one spot ahead of him.
I agree with that.
BTJ or Coleman's there, and Coleman's on the Bills.
I'll take Coleman.
Oh wait, okay. So this is a 103 and 108 in a 12-man league. Okay, nice.
Oh yeah, that's a good setup. Nice setup right there. Set yourself up nice for the incoming season. Appreciate you all. For Rhett Manuel, for Drew Scott, I'm Chris Battistel. Toodles.